Nothing else comes close.
Ready. This has to be a good sign to start off Sabres Live on a, again, file footage day, I think, of inside KeyBank Center. Yeah, what a
Positive thinking.
Yeah.
It will be sunny again.
It will be sunny where you are at some point.
So I'll tell you this, Duff. Remember yesterday I told you I was attacked by wasp a couple of days ago?
Yes.
So I didn't realize it. Like, my left lobe was itching a little bit yesterday during the day. I'm hiding it right now because I want you to see.
Oh, no.
But I'm like, it's itching a little bit. And then when I got home, I looked into the mirror, and I had a big earlobe on one side and the normal side. Look, they're a little different right now. Like, if you look at my earlobe, they're a little different. The left one is really big, and the right one is small.
This is also perfectly normal. One of my ears is larger than the other, so this is not...
But it was, like, literally, like, it felt like it wasn't on my body. I was touching it. It felt like a piece of rubber, like, piece that was added to my ear.
Are you okay? Did you have it checked?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I took Benadryl last night, and it worked out, so that was good.
Well, this is one more reason for you to come visit Marty and the show, Sabres Live, as we are on location.
Check out my earlobe.
How come the promo department didn't have that in the copy? It's Sabres Live in the Saberhood, and it's Thursday at noon, of course, at Johnson's Landing in Hamburg. Great view, great food, great drinks. And, of course, we'll have trivia, giveaways, Rob Ray, bar specials, and more. Join us at noon on Thursday. We can't wait for that. Now,
great place to watch the Sabres games, right, during the season, by the way. So they always have it on. They have a big drop-down projector right behind the bar. They have TVs everywhere. It's fantastic.
Matt Beauvais is coming up here from Channel 7. And before we get to Matt, I had to text Shayna Goldman last night. Her and Dom at The Athletic did a mock expansion draft for the new Texas team, wherever it lands, Houston or Austin. And they did it post 2020, like, for, you know, in the summer of 2027. Yeah. And used the same criteria, you know, of what previous expansion drafts have been.
Oh, boy.
So my text to her was, are you trying to kill hockey? For the second team in Texas before it even begins.
Because they picked the players.
And admittedly, they said that it was kind of a mid roster, but they felt it could challenge for a playoff spot. I guess
Seattle?
I don't want to revisit Seattle, dude.
Because it was bad.
Well, it was bad compared to Vegas, for sure. Yeah. But nobody knew Vegas was going to be any good when it started.
Yeah, but then looking back at Vegas, all the work behind the scenes, the trades, that we'll get.
Like, but there was no guarantee it was going to work.
No, there's no guarantee.
William Carlson hit. Yes. Marchessault hit. Like,
Marc-Andre Fleury being the goalie that he was and everything, obviously. They got Shea Theodore from Anaheim. And it was like, why are you making Shea Theodore available?
Right.
And all of that. So obviously you're 100%. Vegas, there was no guaranteed. Now, when it got to Seattle.
You know what her response was to me?
What?
I'm just trying to help them not be Seattle 2.0.
Yes, that's very fair because I feel like Ron Francis and the Seattle Kraken missed. And they missed on some of the selections, and they also missed on the ability to work some deals and trades. But whoever that team is.
Yeah.
And so who did they have the Sabres losing?
They only lost, obviously, every team, all 32 now would lose one, which is a lot because that puts a lot of people in your system.
Yes.
They lost Ryan McLeod in this, and so and she also had them taking Ryan O'Reilly. So then it got me thinking, well, why don't they just get all the Ryans in the NHL? And that would be fun. But you're not buying that either.
No, I'm not buying that. Here's the thing. So because of the Sabres' depth on defense, instead of protecting the 10 players and one goalie, the Sabres ended up with only four forwards protected, four defensemen protected, and one goalie. So that's why the difference here. They had Darlene Samuelson, Power, and Zellweger protected.
Yeah.
Darlene with the no movement clause, obviously. You look at the Florida Panthers, all the names on red in the on MSG right now is because those all have no movement clause and have to be protected. So Florida doesn't really have work to do. They just protect whoever has no movement clause, and that's the way it goes.
Well, we will see. Hopefully it does come to fruition. Are you, again, Houston or Austin? What's your choice?
I would say Houston.
Yeah. I would like it to be Houston as well, but Austin is obviously pretty incredible. As far as growth, much like other markets that they stepped foot in before, like Nashville, like Vegas, and that's why I think the end result could be
Austin doesn't have any like partnership teams, right? Houston does.
That's the whole, yeah, but Vegas had nothing, and now the whole sports world is going there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
anyway, so obviously when you look at, you know, where the league is at, we're waiting to see how it falls from Commissioner Bettman's standpoint. But I think, obviously, big news today, and that was John Marino getting an extension from Utah. This is significant. Hi, Matt Bove, as he welcomes himself into the studio. John Marino got a 8-year deal, $6.75 million, and he's 29 now, so talk about a long-term commitment. Half their defense corps, obviously, is now locked up, you know, for a pretty significant amount of time, given that they added Mackenzie Weegar last year.
This is one of those that the projection on AFP Analytics meets the contract. It's not like a million or two more or half a million. It was 6.2, ended up being 6.75. Mm-hmm. He'll be 30 when that kicks in, though. You're giving him 8-year deals. That's a lengthy deal. I'd love to get, man, I wish I was going back to my times where I could get 8-year deals. Like, I mean, we were lucky to get
more money.
We were lucky to get 2 years, and Rob Ray got 1-year deal all the time, so that's the way it goes. But what do you think of an 8-year deal for a going to be 30-year-old next year when it kicks in?
It kind of feels like that's what's standard these days, right? Before, it used to be like you'd go, ooh, you'd wince a little bit when you see the numbers. But now it's like that's what everybody is doing. It's also the first thing that I do. Every time somebody signs, I just go to AFP and I look up the numbers and I go, okay. And that's what I base my opinion off of. Okay, that makes sense. Or, ooh, I don't know if that's a good deal. It's what the market, somebody would probably give a huge contract. Yeah. So I guess if somebody would, you'd just rather be the team that keeps him.
I guess the weird thing, and maybe it's not weird, but we saw Tuck leave on an 8-year, and now Marino at age 29 gets an 8-year. I feel like the older guys are getting the max, and the younger guys are getting the shorter term, like the 5-year for Bedard and 5-year offer sheet, Carlson, but even Matthews in his last deal in Toronto, right? So interesting, because we keep talking about how it's trending younger, then why are you giving 8 years to
McDavid
people 30 and older?
2 years. Like, I think it's like, okay, I think they want more control on that. Although, that's the last little bit, or before September 15th, that's the last little bit you can get an 8-year deal.
Yeah.
Because after that, the max will be 7, and as a UFA signing with a different team will be 6. So I think that was a concession from the player side in the last kind of CBA negotiation as to drop it down from 8 and 7 years to 7 and 6.
Anyway, enough about John Marino and contracts. Yes. This is your week off. Welcome in. You've stopped painting for a little bit, or what?
Oh, I was ripping last night. Sherwin-Williams Natural Linen. We had a busy day yesterday. My daughter had tubes, so we were over at the hospital in the morning. Everything went smooth. Everything went well. And then we got home, and I thought that was the accomplishment for the day. I was like, okay, that's going to be good. And then my wife hits me with, you know, these walls, like, really need to be touched up. My wife is pregnant. We have a 3-year-old daughter. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do the painting, but you guys got to get out of the house. It's not safe to be in the house with all these fumes. So I go to the store. Of course you get to the store. It took me a while to figure out the exact paint I need. Did you know that the hardware stores and the actual paint stores, even though they sell the same Sherwin-Williams paint, it's not the same hue? Found that out. Then you get to the store. There you go. The more you know. Then you get there, and they're like, oh, we only sell this color in a gallon. Great. Awesome. $70 later. But then I got home, and I just started. I threw the Bluetooth speaker on, and I just locked in for like 4 hours.
Well, that was your tweet. Says you're at that time in your life where
it was
painting
great.
And listening to classic rock is like.
It was so peaceful. It was so therapeutic.
He's also younger than the original classic rock crowd, so what is classic rock to you?
So did you see the link that I tweeted? It was a Spotify playlist. The playlist is literally just called like Jim Bove songs. So Jim Bove was my dad. Okay. And it's a little bit of everything. I mean, there's some Dire Straits on there. Mm-hmm. So Sabres,
of course.
Sabres adjacent. It's some Bob Seger. It's some AC/DC. It's some Rush. My dad really loved Rush. It's Led Zeppelin. It's The Who. It's Pink Floyd. So that to me is what I
consider. So we're not talking
consider.
Like Green Day, Offspring, like whatever. Like people would say that may be classic rock now, but you're in the original classic rock.
I'm in like what would be known as classic rock even 10 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
Even though like what you just said, that to me I would call rock.
Yeah.
Because growing up that was kind of the rock genre that I feel probably more closely tied to.
Yeah.
But yeah, classic rock, just throw that on, start painting. Walls look good. You worry how it's going to look. You wake up the next day. I felt accomplished.
So did you have time to take a nap throughout all of this? Or are you planning on taking naps? Because you also had a tweet about the best TV to put on before taking a nap. And these are your suggestions. Any movie on TBS you'll fall asleep to on Saturday afternoon. Golf, as long as it's not Sunday. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, by the way. Love that movie.
It's the best.
So funny.
It's the best.
A college football game you don't care about, and This Old House. So those are all good napping, pre-nap TV.
Yes, because they're background noise. Like, I love Forgetting Sarah Marshall, but I've seen it so many times that I'm not intently watching. All of that is perfect background to lie on the couch, fall asleep for a little bit, wake up 30, 40 minutes later, still feel really, really good. You can tell that it's the off season for the Bills and the Sabres because the last two tweets we've been talking about are painting in the house and when to nap. So, yeah, I'm also searching for things to be talking about right
now. I go to bed at night with Nick Nick at night. Like, it's either Friends or The Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
And I can put any one of those shows on at any time of the day.
Yeah.
And it's like a signal to my brain, it's time to go to sleep. Like, I will fall asleep at 2 in the afternoon if I put it on. That's the same thing as that list you just had.
Do you know what Outdoor Boy YouTube videos are? Are either of you familiar with this? This is a guy who literally just goes out in the – he doesn't do it anymore. He retired. He became so famous that I think it was overwhelming for him. But this would be a dude who would literally just go out in the wilderness with some supplies and be like, I'm going to stay alive for the next 3 days and I'm going
to
vlog.
This is Michael Scott trying to –
No, this is somebody who like definitely is capable of doing that. But those were the videos that got me through the nights when we had our first child, our daughter, because it was like, you do the rotation. But my wife's pregnant now. She's due in the fall. I love that because now all of a sudden we're going to have football games all the time. And you could just on a random Friday night turn on some random college football game on the West Coast. You also have hockey. And then with hockey starting a little bit earlier, now I'm going to be just watching a sicko. I'll be like, Mammoth and Sharks are playing at 11 o'clock. And I'm just going to sit here and watch it. So, I'm like, that'll be my late night. That'll be my Friends or my Big Bang Theory.
Good. Welcome to the Celebrini for MVP club, because you will learn that quickly.
Well, you know, he's really, really, really good. And I already saw that he got the EA Sports nod as well. Like, he's so different. When you were watching the Olympics, he was one of those first guys where I was just like, how is this kid so young? It's unfair.
So, what about the Sabres?
Yeah.
What are you thinking? And what, like, I mean, because there's been names like Hellebuck and Kane and others, but those two certainly are the ones that tend to linger right now. Are you in favor of one, both, neither? What needs to be done for next year?
I'm more in favor of Hellebuck than I am of Kane. I think Hellebuck would really, even with the questions about his performance in the playoffs in years past, I do think he raises the floor of this team, and you would feel really confident going into every game because you have Connor Hellebuyck between the pipes. So I like that idea has grown on me. I will admit a couple months ago I didn't love the idea, and now I'm trying to weigh, do I love the idea because it's a big move and they haven't really made a big move yet, or do I love the idea because he's still a really good player? And I think if you could get some really high-end goaltending out of him for 3, 4, 5 years – it's not even really a question. So I like the Hellebuck idea more, even though there would be an acquisition cost to it. With the Patrick Kane idea, my question is, how does he fit with the pieces that they currently have? Mm-hmm. And it feels like we would need to know the domino of if Hellebuck happens or not to then figure out if Kane is a good idea. I do think he would immediately help the power play. Like, I think that would be a no-brainer. I think he would provide a lot of experience in the room because he's won a lot of hockey games. But I also feel more comfortable letting some of the young guys go into those situations and seeing how they could do. So of the two, I like Hellebuck more than Kane.
And that's why I think, for me, it's both or neither.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you get Hellebuck, there is going to be domino effects that, we need to add a Patrick Kane. If you don't get Hellebuck, well, we have already 15 forwards, maybe 16 forwards, and you're like, how many are going to be on the roster when you start the season? But you mentioned the kids. I mean, when the season ended, I was like, well, this has been great for Hustlin. This has been great for Hellenius. Where is Yuri Kulik going to be next year with the blood clot and coming back after missing almost a year? Are you as high as I am right now thinking they will have an impact in the top nine? Maybe even one or two of them could be in the top six? Or are you more on the cautious saying, hey, you know what? Mm-hmm. They're young, and we'll see where that goes.
No, I'm with you. I think that all three of them are very legitimate players. I mean, I think that it's easy to forget what Jiří Kulík was expected to be last year before the blood clot issue started. I mean, he was going into the season as not like a true number one center, but this team's top center. And they really – everybody who you talk to wants you to know how much they like Jiří Kulík. They're like, this kid is so good. He's wired the right way. Last year was a minor setback, which is going to be a really, really impressive career. So I really like him. But I also think he's interesting because it feels like of all of the guys, he's the one who probably has to play center. I remember talking to Jason Zucker about this, and he was like, he's a center. Like, he needs to play center. So now you need to find a spot in your lineup down the middle for him. I think Östlund and Hellenius, both of those guys, it feels like the sky's the limit. Like, Hellenius getting thrown into what he did and being completely unfazed by it was so unbelievably impressive. And then Östlund, the creativity. I'm one of those people who, once the dust settles, I like to go back and kind of just rewatch things in their entirety. I went back and I watched a bunch of the playoff games in the Montreal series in their entirety. The Game 7 loss to Montreal, you know, there's so many different things we can point to. Mm-hmm. In the third period, they were overwhelming Montreal and probably should have scored two or three more goals that they didn't even get to the point of overtime. Hellenius had a great A chance right in front of the net. Zucker had a great A chance. It felt like that line was just buzzing because of him. So, yeah, I like Hellenius a lot. And, losing Östlund was such a notable loss. Mm-hmm. But in the grand, you know, when you're talking about so many different moving parts and you're talking about, hey, they're just trying to win a series, it felt like it got overlooked a little bit. That was notable.
Matt Beauvais from Channel 7 with us here. Do you have lines in mind?
Yeah. I think that if I was building lines right now, assuming they don't make any other moves, I think I would probably roll with, like, Benson, Kulík, Thompson, just because it feels like they like that combination. Then I think after that it would probably be...
I mean, they ended with Benson, Norris, Thompson, obviously.
Yeah, then I would think the second line would probably... See, Doan is interesting because I feel like he could play a lot of different places.
I think he has to be in the top six.
I think so, too. So then I think the second line would probably be Doan, Norris, Quinn. This is tricky because where does Zucker go?
I had him on the fourth line when we did this exercise last week.
So here's the thing, and I don't disagree with that because when I write the lines out, it feels like that's what I naturally do. Doesn't that kind of take away from what you want your fourth line to be? Like, he can play there, but if you want your fourth line to be a fast, physical line, like, he still can score.
But who in your top nine? Because right now you have 10 players in your top nine. You have Benson, Norris, Thompson, Quinn, Doan, McLeod, the young kids, and Zucker. So that's 10.
Yeah.
Which one of those 10, and we're not looking at saying, well, there's always injuries. Yes, but which one of those 10 is not in the top nine, because there's a numbers game here.
That's why it feels like another move maybe should happen or has
to
happen.
He had Jiří starting in Rochester.
For a few games. I felt if everybody's healthy, maybe he starts a few games in Rochester just because he hasn't played in a long time. Or maybe Konsta starts in Rochester waiting for somebody to maybe not play as well or trade or somebody get hurt, but because he can... He doesn't have to be put on waiver, so that's where it gets complicated.
I'm not the guy looking to trade McLeod, but he's another one of the players that when you start to piece it all together, feels like, how does this guy necessarily fit? Because you could say right now, oh, he's your third-line center. There's no problems. There's no questions asked. Well, you have a couple other guys who I think could also fit into that role, and we saw what happened in the playoffs last year, and it's not like he was atrocious or anything, but he did get demoted, and Lindy Ruff actually made a point to talk about it. So it's like, okay, what is he? Is he a third-line center? Probably. Certainly not. I mean, not here. He's not a second line center. But then you start to think about the Winnipeg stuff, and it'd be like, yeah, if he's one of the pieces going back, it feels like the puzzle becomes a lot clearer.
Well, he has value in the sense that he's had consecutive career years. He's on a very good contract here moving forward, and he's still mid 20s, as you say. So it's definitely something that we'll continue to focus on here, because I had the kid line together, actually.
All three of them?
It was with Jiří in the middle.
Yeah.
Went to your liking. It was,
As the third line?
As the third line.
And I have Jiří on the right flank on the power play with Dahlin up top and Tage on the left flank. So you have one-timer on both sides, and I'm just saying, like, keep playing pass, and go there.
But so then, Duffer, what was your fourth line then? Was it Zucker, McLeod,
It was Zucker with Krebs and Malenstein, and then Carrick wasn't in.
Where'd you have McLeod?
On the
second
the,
line.
The Quinn line.
Oh, so you okay?
Don Quinn.
So you so you had Norris as your top line centers, which
I did.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
So
with
yeah.
Benson
yeah.
and Thompson, we okay. did, we had pretty much that all.
Right,
together.
But I think most people would still expect Tage to be the number one center on this team.
I feel like Tage is a wing. Now.
But not if they make moves, though. That's
true.
The thing. Like, if you're talking about mm-hmm. if McLeod's a centerpiece in a deal,
yeah.
then,
yeah.
you know, you can see that happening very easily. So.
That's a good problem to have. That's the, where the flexibility
so. Yeah.
comes into play. Because you could have Tage at center. You could have Oslund at center. You could have Kulik at center. You could have Helenius at center.
Exactly.
Like, you've got a lot of options.
You have options.
Hey, we got to do some rapid fire here.
Well, do we want to move on to a different sport? Because he's also covering football, and we have an old tweet that
sure.
we have to bring up.
Oh,
yeah.
no.
Whatever yeah, so the Bills rookie are reporting.
Did you notice
today.
Marty's swollen ear?
Yeah, did you notice my
Well,
ear
I heard little... about it when I was out
it's
there.
Like
you
it
got
feels
attacked.
Weird to touch. I got attacked by wasps at a cookout. So anyway, that's my story. That was Sunday. But
float like a butterfly.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a wasp. That's what it is. Not the right line. Okay, so the Bills rookie are reporting today.
Yes.
You obviously are going to be big into the Bills training
yep.
camp and all of that. But we have an old tweet that we have to show to you.
Okay.
And that is from 2013.
Oh,
and
my
you
God.
Said, I have a man crush on Doug Marrone. So Doug Marrone was obviously hired by the Bills and was the coach and then decided to quit. So where is your man crush on Marrone now? And what about the Bills and Cam this year?
Maybe he was just like really nice to me that day. I have no idea. When I went back and I sifted through all my old tweets to make sure there wasn't embarrassing things, that one apparently got slipped through the cracks a little bit. I don't know what would have made me tweet that. Can you bring it up? When was the
date?
January 7th, 2013. In the dead of winter. Maybe he won over his first press conference. Maybe I was so naive. Look at that. 2 comments and 5 likes. We're really struggling back in the day, apparently, boys. I don't know what it was about. Don't really know why
retweet,
I said it.
No retweet.
That one didn't work. I can tell you that one did not work. And I remember when Doug Marrone chose to leave. I was at home because that was before I had fully transitioned to sports. I was still a news reporter for a couple of years, so I would help the sports team. And it was like, oh, my gosh, all of a sudden the Bills coach is resigning on New Year's Eve. Like, it just immediately had to jump into action. So safe to say, no longer have a man crush on Doug Marrone. That is definitely true.
What was real quick? What was that journey like for you from
it was crazy.
State to
I mean, it was awesome.
Becoming sports director?
I'm very fortunate. My first opportunity to kind of dip the toes in the water was with the Sabres, just because with our sports department, a lot of times they need a little extra assistance. So the first like big Sabres things I covered were the 2014 and 2015 NHL draft. Mm. So there was so much excitement.
Salmon Jack.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There was so much excitement around that. But I always loved sports. I grew up here. I see what sports mean to this area. So I knew I wanted to get into sports at some time. News was pretty comfortable. I felt like I was getting the hang of it, but I also knew that I kind of wanted to bet on myself. So that was in 2015, 2016. So 10 years later, here we are talking to you guys.
That's pretty good. Getting to know a little bit more about you. Mm-hmm. What's your obsession with oatmeal? And that plain oatmeal, is that the thing? Like, I don't get that at all.
You can dress up oatmeal any way you want. You could put some apples in it. You could put some strawberries in
brown
it.
Sugar.
It's very versatile. It's very affordable. When you got a little kid, wow, look
well,
at
when
me.
You're training,
and you're
that's
training
when you're
like
training.
That too.
Yeah, that was back in the day. Look at us flipping tires, man. Those were the good old days. Remember the Tough Mudder? Remember
yeah.
that race that people used to do? That was us training for the Tough Mudder years ago. So that was fun. You know, that was definitely like hey, plain oatmeal, put anything in it. Now to this day, I got to get something for my daughter every morning for breakfast.
Oh,
oatmeal
really?
Is in the rotation.
Okay.
She really likes these protein pancakes that come prepackaged, but they're $4 a pop. That's expensive, man. Like every time she's like, Daddy, can I have pancakes?
Have
I'm like, this is a four. I was yeah. like, this is a $4 meal for you. Oatmeal's like 30 cents.
Thank yeah. you for coming in.
No, thank
we
you guys for having
me. We won't ask you to
me.
Do it again during this week off for you, but maybe the next time you have some time off, can you come back?
Anytime
you guys
want to
Because we have a long
have
list
me.
Of questions
I
still to talk.
I love chatting with you.
Okay.
I loved watching you when I was growing up as well, for you, on TV, for you as a hockey player. So I was like, oh, my God.
We have to listen to you and Sal talk about the Bills
yep.
on your
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, it's always game day in Buffalo.
Always game day in Buffalo.
You know, it's weird because I wish we talked about the Sabres more. Some people agree, but then some comments are like, "Just this is a Bills podcast. Talk about the Bills."
Yeah.
So if I was like, Yuri Kulik could be the first line center, I might get murdered, but that's the deal.
Matt Bove, thank you so much for coming in. We have a new Sabres Embedded coming out tomorrow. It is on Sabres YouTube. It's Josh Norris in Michigan and his training ritual, and obviously looking forward to seeing the story of Josh, and we'll be able to view that on Sabres YouTube tomorrow.
What's up, Sabre?
That was new.
That was new. Need a number.
Skate.
Hey.
Come on, baby.
Nice shot, bro.
That felt so good.
I'd be lying if I didn't say I was a little bit nervous about this next one.
What?
Got great mitts, bro. Great mitts. You're so right.
Great shot.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres season begins October 1st in Columbus. The home opener is October 3rd, KeyBank Center against the Hawks. Your chance to win two tickets. All you got to do, go to sabres.com/enter.
Hooked high in the air, Grandpierre mixing it up behind the play. Here's Grandpierre, Shaykovsky ready to go, and now Bondra comes over and lays the lumber on Grandpierre, and they all file in. Here comes Billington down the ice as Biron is fixing it up with Witt. Now Billington's in there. Everybody's going at it now. A jam in the corner. Primo's trying to get free. Now finally the two goaltenders grapple and hang on to one another. And four officials on the ice trying to make peace.
The only Grandpierre in NHL history, and he just decided to get in Peter Bondra's face in preseason action. Jean-Luc, welcome to Sabres Live.
What's up, guys? Not for a way. Hold on. Bondra decided to get in my face. I didn't get in nobody's face. You know, you guys all know I don't like trouble. It just somehow found me once in a while, right?
How did that work? You end up with Bondra, end up with Brendan Witt. Like, that should have been a change. Like, that wasn't the right person for me
in that
moment. I
wish you
had
dusted Billington, though. That would have been awesome.
Billington was an older guy, and I respected him so much. I was like, we're not doing that. That was preseason. Too. Like, you have to remember, that was a preseason game in Buffalo, and we got into it. That was great.
Yeah. Why is Peter Bondra playing a preseason game in Buffalo?
That was my thought exactly.
to get in a fight, get kicked out, and then not have to worry about it again. So
that is correct.
There's been a big month for me. We connected on LinkedIn earlier in July, and now we're here on Sabres Live together. This is the
blossoming relationship
here.
I mean, we're getting closer and closer by the week, so I like where this is going. What's next? Who knows?
Well, we often have an empty chair here, you know, in our Sabres Live studio, so maybe you should make more trips up here.
Come on and visit anytime. We'll have you sit here, tell us stories, your analysis. I mean, obviously, you covered the Columbus Blue Jackets, but you covered the whole league. You can do it in French and in English, and let's go. I pretend I can do it in French and English. I feel like I can't do it in either language, but that's good. We need more of you on the show, so make it happen.
Hey, whenever you guys need me, I'll drive up there. Not a problem. Love being in Buffalo. Actually, I'll be coming for the alumni tournament here next month, right?
Yep. So, in August.
So I'll be swinging by. Maybe we can do a show live there.
What are you doing? I mean, we talked about Columbus, but I want to also say, like, you don't just do hockey. You're the real estate king of Columbus, right? Like, you are a wheeler and dealer. How's that going? And how did you get into real estate in the first place?
So after the lockout and so I went over to Europe. It's kind of funny. So I went to Europe. I remember during the lockout of 04, me and a buddy of mine, we started like flipping properties, and we're buying them, fixing them up, and then selling them back. And I really got into real estate like pretty early. So I was probably like 27 years old at the time. And I'm like, I just love going out, looking at properties with the agent, the whole negotiation part. I was like, this is pretty cool. that's what I want to do when I grow up. So once I basically, you know, because as an athlete, you don't realize that you're living a kid's dream your whole life. And then all of a sudden you're going to retire and then real life's going to smack you in the mouth unless you made like tens and tens of millions. So while I was still playing overseas, actually, I decided to get my license in Ohio and then start practicing real estate in the off season. So I'd go in the morning, work out, and then I'd spend the whole afternoon just around the office learning from all the different agents. And once I retired, I really dove into it full time and really, really enjoyed the journey, the experience, the growth. You know, you get to meet people from all different, you know, walks of life. And it's just something that I take a lot of pride in. And fully, like, to be fully honest, I remember when I sold my first house in Columbus. I mean, I hope he's not listening. I doubt it. I had the worst agent in history. And I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe I just paid this guy tens of thousands of dollars to help me through his transaction when I felt like I did everything. So I figured if he can make a living doing it, I can for sure. And yeah, it worked out pretty well.
You had an amazing property just recently listed. You had the whole drone shot through the house, outside the fire pit, the backyard. I'm like, I want to buy that house, Duffer. Let's make Sabres Live, like right out of Columbus. But so you got some pretty nice properties that you've been showcasing lately.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, I've got, you know, anywhere, I've done anywhere from literally like a $120,000 condo to a $4.9 million home. So it's like, a lot of times people will be like, oh, you probably don't deal with people, you know, in my price point. I'm like, dude, I don't care. I just love getting to know people, getting to know their situation, helping them through. So it doesn't, yeah, I do get some nice ones, and those typically, you know, you bring in the drone and stuff like that. But, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a first time home buyer or, you know, a freaking gazillionaire, I'll help you out. Why, Duffer, are you next in line, Duffer? I can hook you up.
I am not. I'm such a letdown for you at this moment. There's no question. I'm just curious, like, I may or may not in the next 2 weeks have a concert planned in Columbus. So when I roll into town, am I likely to see your face on billboards, advertising? Like, how do you put yourself out there?
Honestly, I would say 95% of my business is word of mouth. So past clients. So I've been in real estate for 17 years now. So it's like literally like I've sold houses to parents and then I've had their kids and some even their grandkids buying. So it's literally just providing good service. That's the best, you know, that's the best advertisement you can have. So yes, I don't want to have a picture on my cards. I don't have my phone number on any signs. And I don't put my face anywhere because I think, you know, I just like to see my face in the mirror. That's about it. I don't want to see it on billboards. So I do not pay for any kind of advertisement. So you will be safe, Duffer.
You have safe. A face for TV, so that is good. Not for billboard, for TV.
Exactly.
I like that.
That is correct.
Now, let's go back to, you know, when you were a young kid and real estate was maybe not in your mind, hockey was. You were playing in Val d'Or with J.P. Dumont and Steve Bégin and those guys up there, Roberto Luongo. And I was in Beauport and then in Hall, played against you a bunch of time. You were fast. You were tough. You had it all. What was that like for you in juniors, knowing that, you know, you had to face me and try to score against me all the time?
Well, number one, you're the least of my worries, to be honest with you, Marty. No, I'm joking. No, it was a great journey. So I started in Quebec as an underage, and that was, you know, it was a shock, right? Moving from, you know, my parents' home early on, and it's like it came out of nowhere because my plan was to go play midget AAA right around the corner. And it was kind of like I went to camp just thinking, hey, I'm going to go to camp, learn, and come back home. And little did I know, I would never come back home. So it was a big, big shock my first season. And then once I got traded to Val d'Or, that was the bigger shock. So for those of you who don't know, imagine going from, you know, Buffalo to Alaska, basically. I mean, Quebec felt warm compared to Val d'Or. So once I got there, It was a shock, but we just went there in December for the U-17 championship, yeah. which we won against the United States. So I've learned a little bit about Valdor and how crazy the crowd was there. So that was the only exciting part about it. But honestly, I spent 17, 18, 19, three seasons up in Valdor, and those were probably some of the best years of my life. So it's like sometimes, you know, you get traded and you're thinking, oh my gosh, do I quit? Do I really want to go up there? And it turns out to be one of the greatest experience you've had. That was the example. When I got there, the team was so bad, and my second and third year were extremely competitive. And as you said, we had a lot of really good players that came along as well.
Did that make it easier for you as a pro moving around team to team? And even you mentioned the European journey, and you hit a lot of stops over there as well. It just feels like you were someone who was, you know, I don't want to say
you can easily, say well traveled.
Easily accepting of change. Like
suitcase.
Like if you go into it with the right attitude, I think you can embrace all of it. And that's what it's sounding like to me based on that junior experience.
It really is, you know, whether, and that's funny. So after, you know, the NHL, I went to Sweden during the original lockout in 04, and really liked the experience. And then the season after, when the league came back, had a couple two-way offers, and I looked at my wife, was like, let's just go over to Europe. I'm like, I don't have to worry about fighting. I don't have to worry about my eye getting all messed up. So we kind of just packed up, and I think the kids really embraced it. So I think, you know, as a, let's call it the leader of the family, if you have a good attitude and you don't stress out over moves, your whole family kind of follows the lead. And it's crazy because now I'm in real estate and I deal with people that are moving from one neighborhood to the other, from a country to a different one. And I can go through that experience with them because I've been through it, you know, literally moving to Germany and finding an English school for my kids to go to, and, you know, and making sure that they can adapt to every situation. It was extremely helpful, you know, life experience that hockey gave me that I can kind of use now in my real estate career. So I didn't want to necessarily talk about real estate today, but that's pretty much what I do every day. And honestly, all my experience moving from country to country, city to city, and understanding what the spouse is going through and the kids are going through has been extremely helpful. And for me, for my personal growth and my kid, it's been a fantastic experience as well. It became, you know, from the first year, especially my daughter, because she was older, she was like, I don't want to move. I don't want to move. To her senior year in high school, I told my wife, maybe we should stay back with her and make sure she can finish her school, graduate, get ready for college. That my daughter was crying and said, I can't believe I'm just going to stay in Columbus for my senior year. She's like, I just want to go, right? So it just shows you how the attitude shift can go from 8 years earlier when she's like, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, to her senior year. I'm like, hey, spend a year with your friends. You get to do the dances and stuff. And she's like, no. I want to go to Europe, right? So it's really, really cool to see how these experiences have put so much growth, not only in me, but also my kids.
I just realized, and I don't know why it took me that long, why Peter Bondra went after you in that preseason game. Because in the 99 All-Star game in the AHL, you were the fastest skater of the AHL All-Star Skills Competition. Peter Bondra won the fastest skater at the NHL at the All-Star in 99. And your time was the fastest time. Like, it was faster than Peter Bondra. That's probably why he came after you. But my question is, and we got a great picture, Jean-Luc, is your time learning figure skating helped you with your actual hockey skating? Because look at this picture of you as a figure skater. Man, this is like... Look at the style you had. Amazing, right? So it was the figure skating helping you to be that great of a skater in hockey?
Oh, yeah. I knew that would come out the minute you start asking that question. Yes, it did help incredibly. Listen, long story short, for this picture, so my parents both immigrated from Haiti. when we got to, when they got here, obviously, you know, they didn't know much about the culture, you know, a big soccer family. And then my dad started watching hockey, and the Montreal Canadiens in particular, although he was a big Nordique fan. And he basically told my mom's like, hey, you need to put our kid in that thing that they're all doing here, you know, on the ice. So she took me to skating lesson thinking he was talking about figure skating. And then at the end of the year, right before that picture was taken, as we're going into the arena, he's like, where's the equipment? And there I was just my skates. And she kind of looked at my mom's like, I told you to put him in that hockey thing, not this. So that was my only year of figure skating. But I will tell you, you learn a lot about edge work and all that stuff much better, because your only focus is the skates instead of a stick, a puck, a helmet, and all this stuff that can distract you. So I would say that figure skating definitely gave me a good base to be a good skater. So great question, Marty.
Was the World Cup big for your parents and for you? I think it was the first time Haiti was in the World Cup during your lifetime.
Yes, huge. I watched pretty much every moment when I could. The only bad thing is I did not see the final because I was driving from Toronto to Montreal during the World Cup final on Sunday. So I missed that, but my wife had the live stream, so I may have peeked once in a while here. But yeah, love soccer.
Okay, so you cover Columbus. I feel like we're Columbus East now with Jarmo Kekalainen as the GM, John Davidson as the senior advisor. The opening of the season is in Columbus. That's the home opener for the Blue Jackets, the Sabres' first game. Where is Columbus at with, you know, Werenski maybe wanting to be traded and all of that? And what can you tell us on Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson? You've seen them and you've been with them for a lot of years.
So I think to start with Jarmo and, you know, John Davidson, you know, Josh Flynn, I mean, the whole squad, they, you know, as a general manager, you have people that you trust and people that, you know, make you better, people that can challenge you, et cetera. So you're going to bring these familiar faces with you. And for Jarmo, he's been with Josh Flynn for a long, long time in Columbus. And then obviously they go together way back to St. Louis, him and John Davidson. But each has their unique skill, right? Jarmo is... let's be honest, he's not necessarily a people's person, although he's gotten better, but he's an extremely smart talent evaluator and he can do some good deals. I think John Davidson is more of the people's person, you know, like you, I mean, you know, JD, you meet him and he's warm and fuzzy. And, you know, Jarmo's gotten better because I think around the arena, Jarmo and outside the arena, Jarmo are two completely different personalities. So I think bringing John Davidson to have another voice, and yes, he's got Marc Bergevin, he's got a very smart thing around him, people around him. But if you're going to be a good GM and have success, having a good team around you, some familiar faces that know what you like, know what you don't like, and know how to challenge you is a really, really good thing, not only for yourself, but also for the organization. Yeah. And I think that's what Jarmo's trying to build around himself right now as you know, his role into the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres growing more and more.
Jean-Luc, we got to fly. Come back on for a season preview with us, okay?
Let me know when it is. It'll be a pleasure to join, boys.
I have the chair.
Jean-Luc Grandpierre, former Sabre, Blue Jackets analyst, real estate mogul.
Mogul.
We will wrap up Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Come hang with Sabres Live in the Sabrehood on Thursday. We're in Hamburg at Johnson's Landing. It's going to be a ton of fun. Noon, of course, for the show. Rob Ray is going to be there. We've got trivia and prizes like Tage bobbleheads and Sabre flags, Rasmus Dahlin pins, and more words of wisdom, of course, from Razor and Marty, and all shaping up for a big Thursday. We're going to have a big show tomorrow. More on that coming up. It is time for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Celebrating with a full cup is hard, Marty.
Well, that's why the Stanley Cup, you put the beer and the drinks in the cup and you drink out of it. So Spain obviously celebrating their World Cup win, and Yamal has the trophy and he puts the cup in his mouth as he's trying to lift the trophy. Well, the cup spilled all of his drink all over himself. So he's like, oh man, what do I do now? But that's why, like, mm-hmm. you have to put the drink in the cup, but the World Cup trophy doesn't have a bowl.
That would be hard. Lindy Ruff was hired on this day for the first time as head coach. That was 1997. He was then the 15th head coach in Sabres history. He is, of course, coming back for this season.
What a first couple of years. Conference finals, Stanley Cup final in the first 2 years. That's pretty crazy.
Fittingly, after having Jean-Luc Grandpierre on the show today, happy birthday to a burgeoning Jackets legend, unless he leaves town. Kirill Marchenko is 26 today.
26. He's still young. He's available. There could be a move. He could be a move at some point this offseason.
In arena legends, James McDuffie, Mike Kaminska on Sabres Live tomorrow.